Hi,
this is Take Charge Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye.
Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back, welcome back. Here we are again with a amazingly informative show. What we are going to be exploring is the microbiome. We've discussed it many times, but now we're going to look at it very closely and understand what our intestinal microflora is doing for our health. And we're also going to talk about specific nutrients that are necessary for balancing our bodies and our health programs, and why. So I'm here with my co-host,
Carol Peterson.
And Carol, again, went to a conference and met a doctor who literally had the audience on their edge of their chairs, listening to information that they really hadn't put it together in a way, or didn't have the complete understanding in a way that he was sharing with the audience. So, Carol, could you introduce the doctor?
Yes, my delight. I was at the International College of Integrative Medicine meeting that was just in Minneapolis. And the theme of the meeting was integrated cancer therapies. And one of the highlights of the meeting was Dr. Gregory Plotnikoff. And I'd like to give you a little background on him. He's double board certified as an internist and a pediatrician. He is a graduate of Carleton College, and then he went to Harvard Divinity School, and finally the University of Minnesota Medical School. He was also on staff in a medical school in Japan, and he was teaching herbal medicine in Japanese.
Whoa.
He's got quite an interesting background. He's also the author of a book called Trust Your Gut, Get Lasting Healing from IBS and Other Chronic Digestive Problems Without Drugs. One of the things Dr. Plotnikoff brought up in his lectures was something very interesting I had never heard about. So I'd like to welcome Dr. Plotnikoff and bring this up right out of the gate. And it's a relationship between coenzyme Q10 and vitamin K. Dr. Plotnikoff, welcome, and I wonder if we can start there. That was quite great. Eye-opening for me.
Well, great. Well, thank you. It was quite eye-opening for me because, first of all, CoQ10 is widely considered and believed to be very important for all kinds of reasons. It is a critical cofactor in energy production. It is a critical cofactor in our mitochondria. It plays a role in antioxidant or a lot of protective effects. So it's an important molecule. A lot of the attention on it has been because statin agents used for fighting high cholesterol actually block production of coenzyme Q10.
Mm-hmm.
And actually it's been shown that people on statins generally have 40% lower blood levels than people not on statins. And So there's been a lot of concern with that as a cause for muscle pains and fatigue and stuff. But vitamin K, nobody's interested in vitamin K. That is like the most boring topic in medicine. It's just kind of, and yet it's not. And this is what's really wild. Vitamin K really should have been named vitamin F, as in A, B, C, D, E, F. But it got named vitamin K because the German word for coagulation starts mm-hmm. with K. And uh-huh. all focus since the 1930s has been on vitamin K and blood clotting. Anything outside of that is just kind of like, what? No. You know. And so all the attention on coagulation has blinded us to the fact that actually vitamin K is a critical vitamin. Actually, it's considered essential, which means that we humans cannot make vitamin K.
That's interesting.
We depend upon it from other sources.
Now, I thought it was K was made in our intestines.
Well, you're right. We don't make it. Our bacteria do.
Okay.
And so our friendly neighborhood bacteria do the work for us. But actually, in the entire planet Earth, we can say all the vitamin K on the planet comes from plants or microbes or fungi. These three kingdoms produce the vitamin K that we in the animal kingdom need. So we're really dependent upon these other kingdoms. And, oh, gosh, lo and behold, all three can be found within our intestines. That is diet. And so think of green leafy vegetables. We're mm-hmm. talking about kale and spinach and, oh, as well as broccoli. And if it's green and vegetable, there's going to be some vitamin K in that, likely. That's vitamin K1. Vitamin K1 can be absorbed and it goes to the liver. But what we really need is vitamin K2. And vitamin K2 can be produced by our bacteria, certain types of bacteria. If we have a good supply of friendly, beneficial bacteria, they can do the work of making vitamin K2 for us. So you say, well, who cares about vitamin K2? What's that to do with the price of eggs? Well, actually, vitamin K2 plays a critical role in activating 17 different proteins in our body. And these are proteins, yes, for blood clotting, coagulation, but it's also proteins for brain health, heart health, bone health, anti-inflammation, and anti-cancer activity. You say, oh, well, those are some of my favorite organs. Tell me more.
All of them.
Yes, tell me more.
So, the challenge is that one is people actually may have been told by their doctors to avoid food with vitamin K in
exactly,
it because
very
blood
often.
Thinners.
Exactly.
And that's an important topic. People on warfarin or Coumadin, these are anti-vitamin K agents, and they work by actually blocking vitamin K, and that makes the blood thin. And so if one is thinking about adding vitamin K, one has to wait and talk about it and plan on a lengthy conversation with one's doctor. The reason why it's worth taking that lengthy time for a lengthy conversation is people on warfarin or Coumadin tend to have accelerated atherosclerosis and accelerated bone loss.
The plot thickens.
Why is it when we age, we lose calcium from our bones and gain calcium in our arteries? Well, the missing link is vitamin K. Vitamin K is actually essential for putting calcium into bones and keeping calcium out of the arteries. Huh. Who knew that kale could actually be so good?
Is it K1 or a combination of K1 and K2?
Well, it appears to be a combination, but K2 appears to be far more important.
Far more powerful.
K1 mostly goes to the liver. K2 K2 gets concentrated in brain, in aorta, in pancreas, and other places. And K2 is what is used on a prescription basis in Japan for treating osteoporosis.
Mm-hmm.
So,
very, very, very interesting.
Now,
yeah. So, okay, well, here's the challenge. Now, when there's drugs out there for increasing bone density, and there people are very excited about them. For example, a variety of bone enhancing medications exist. They come in pill form, they come in IV form, they come in shot form, a variety of things, and people can get very excited about the technology of that. And here's what I think those of interest to your audience, and what we the word that we really want to get out is, wait a second, if we're focused on bone health, we got to think of bones not being like the Rocky Mountains, but being much more like a coral reef. It's a living matrix, and we need to support the whole matrix, not just deposit more and more boulders on the pile.
Mm-hmm.
And this living matrix depends upon things like vitamin K, but not many bone doctors talk about vitamin K. Certainly vitamin D, certainly anabolic hormone status, homocysteine status, gluten status, all these things all play a role in bone health. Vitamin K being the latest and perhaps as important as vitamin D for good healthy bones. And certainly, I can tell you from my experience as a professor at a Japanese medical school in Tokyo for 6 years, that the preferred treatment of osteoporosis in Japan is not a pill or a shot or an IV, but actually very high dose vitamin K2.
What?
In fact,
define high dose.
And we're talking about 45 milligrams a day
really?
Of vitamin
K2. Mm-hmm.
And
so let's just put that in perspective. Many of the supplements you get over the counter right now with K, if people have become aware of vitamin K, they're only like 100, 200
150
micrograms.
Generally, yeah. It's 150 so, micrograms.
Yeah.
So
we're talking about
times less.
Yeah. So we're talking about at 45 milligrams, we're talking about a bottle of vitamin K2 per day.
Now, let me ask you, is there a chance of blood clotting?
No, it won't. It does. Although anti-vitamin K is used to thin blood,
mm-hmm.
vitamin K does not thicken blood.
Okay, that is a powerful misconception that we carry around. But there's something else that you said that Carol came home from the conference, called me up to tell me.
And yes. But I know what you're about to say, too.
Okay. Pardon?
Yes.
She said that you held up the structure of a vitamin K and CoQ10,
yep.
And they were almost identical. And here,
nearly identical.
Pardon?
Yes. Absolutely, nearly identical.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this leads to a story that's worth sharing.
Okay, I've got one too. Okay. After you.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Cool. Well. Okay, what got me interested in vitamin K to begin with, I mean, since no one's interested in vitamin K, and my practice here in Minneapolis at Minnesota Personalized Medicine focuses on mystery, complexity, severity. And so I am like the fifth opinion or the 37th opinion type doctor, and that is my role is to unravel mysteries. And for people who have had a lot of medical workup and still aren't any better, or have a diagnosis but no one knows how to treat it, mm-hmm. or everything that's known to treat it isn't working. This is my practice. I do deep. I'm like this really geeky internist who really does deep dives in the basic sciences to find things. And lo and behold, there's an unforgettable story of a woman in her 60s with severe fatigue, going. Back many years, a lot of workup at world-famous medical centers, and they said, oh, your labs are all normal. You're fine. No, I'm not fine. Well, we recommend seeing a psychiatrist.
Okay.
Yeah, oh, thank you very much. And she came to me, and we found some things to tweak, but no home runs, until we reached vitamin K. Now, to convey the unbelievable response, this is a woman who many days a week had to choose between taking a shower or going to the mailbox, but she couldn't do both in the same day.
Wow.
It was just too much.
Mm-hmm.
And literally we started her on vitamin K, and within a week she's literally calling saying, I just went hiking in Montana and cooked and cleaned.
Wow. In 1 week?
In 1 week. Unbelievable. Now, I've been in practice 32 years. You know, it's just kind of, there, things like this just don't happen. So I said, okay, a phenomenon that we cannot readily explain, but certainly cannot ignore, got to look into this, and so that's why I started going deep dives into vitamin K and found out, oh, it's a mitochondrial rescue agent. Oh,
wow.
In people with blocked CoQ10, it can detour around to allow energy to be made. Oh, it's got all these different functions, including all these pro-brain health aspects, anti-inflammatory. Wow. How come it's a secret? Well, for your readers and your listeners now, it's no longer a secret.
This is amazing. Yeah. You know, I heard a story, and this was about 3 years ago. And a friend of a friend, actually a little closer than that, neurologist, his father was in hospice. He had an enlarged heart, congestive heart failure. He said, no, I won't do another surgery. That's it. I'm ready. So the son is a neurologist. He started doing all this research. And he went to his father. He had nothing to lose. And gave him 70 milligrams of vitamin K a day. And that was 10 years ago. And the man plays golf 3-4 times a week. He maintains his K. And within a week, he was functioning again. And I never...
Wait a second. He graduated from hospice?
Yes.
Yes.
He's home. And the part that I had never understood how this could make such a transformation, I kept this story in the back of my mind. When Carol came home and told me the correlation between CoQ10 and vitamin K, I said, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's what made that shift. Because supposedly, if you get high enough CoQ10, you can change ejection fractions.
Yep.
But I've seen it not work also. So what you just said was you're going around, and you're literally around the vitamin of the CoQ10 with the K2, and you're getting function again as a mitochondrial rescue. This is a very powerful thing you just said.
Yes, extremely.
Well, on so many levels, this is so important. Just from, if we look just at CoQ10, CoQ10 is expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And at this cancer conference, they said in certain protocols they had, they were recommending upwards of 1,200 milligrams a day of CoQ10.
Do you know the kind
of... That would empty the bank account in a week.
Exactly.
Know. Yes.
And CoQ10 is wonderful, but who can afford those kind of doses?
Right, and especially if you don't need to do those kind of doses. So when we think about vitamin K also being so important for brain health, a lot of people have been recommending CoQ10 for Parkinson's and other neurodegenerative diseases.
Yes.
I'm just kind of like... let's not forget the vitamin K, because it has other additional benefits in addition to being so incredibly similar to CoQ10.
So If we're looking at a corollary, would you be able to help us on this one? 70 milligrams of K, what would that be equivalent to or close to when we're dealing with CoQ10?
I can't tell you that. I do think that 70 milligrams a day of vitamin K sounds like an acre of kale. if we're talking about multiple bushels per day. But
Well, is this something we can tie into the power of the microbiome and make sure that we're getting plenty from that?
Yes.
I have another question? I have one more question. I would take vitamin K. Now, my patients, they come to me, they have some, you know, they seek me out, and they have some level of understanding. So I would take vitamin K levels on all my patients. They were not well, that's why they came to me in the first place. But their K was always within normal range. So is the range wrong? Is the test wrong? Or I don't know. So what are
both answer to the range is wrong and the test is wrong.
Okay, so, can you help us me out on that one?
Okay, so the range is based upon coagulation concerns.
Okay.
The test doesn't really. It's extremely complex measurement as opposed to measuring a hemoglobin or something like that, and so the complexity of the measurement raises all kinds of different nuances. And in fact, it doesn't really matter because there's no upper limit on vitamin K. Judging by the longest living people in the world who are taking 45 milligrams a day for osteoporosis and not keeling over, a good breakfast in Japan is called natto.
Mm-hmm.
It is a fermented bean paste that is the blue cheese of Japan. It is
stinky.
Has an unforgettable aroma, and it has an unforgettable texture. And I happen to really like it. I put it on a bowl of rice and then kind of scoop it. Even though I'm very, very careful, it's just kind of, my whole face would be covered like a spider web of goo by the end of the meal. But a breakfast bowl of natto in Japan can be as much as 1,000 micrograms of vitamin K2. And people have breakfast like that, you know, 4 or 5 or more times per week. And maybe they'll have natto and a natto roll at night at the izakaya. And so people get a lot of natto in Japan. So that's at least 1,000 micrograms
That'd be
1,000 micrograms or 1 milligram.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're talking about 45 milligrams or 70 milligrams, we're talking about 70 bowls of natto a day. That's kind of like physically impossible.
Got away from an acre of kale.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. So I think listeners might enjoy going to YouTube and Googling natto and kids and getting a real kick out of seeing kids go crazy with something they can't imagine a human being ever eating. But no, I happen to be a big natto fan, and so I would my response is, why not natto?
Oh, I'm a big fan also when it's encapsulated.
Ah, okay. When it's tightly under control, keep it under wraps. Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, the microbiome plays actually a really important role here in another angle, which is really important to talk about. And this is speculative, but when I said vitamin K has to be produced by the plant kingdom or the animal kingdom, the plant kingdom or the microbial kingdom or the fungi kingdom, the pathway that those kingdoms use is called the Shikimati pathway.
Mm-hmm.
And no animal on this planet has the Shikimati pathway in it. And for that reason, we depend upon those critters and organisms on our planet, sharing the planet with us, to make this for us. And that includes our friendly neighborhood bacteria and our intestines. And the challenge is, though, lo and behold, step 6 of the Shikimati pathway is what is blocked by glyphosate, Roundup.
Yes. Oh.
I was just thinking that.
Yes. So, imagine this. Imagine here in the Midwest, people use Roundup right and left. It's kind of like, it's up there with orange juice for breakfast. It is used to kind of, quote, dry out the fields at the end of the season to make harvesting of soybeans and corn and other and cotton so much easier. So massive amounts of this herbicide are used. And it was approved by the FDA because one of the arguments was, hey, it only blocks the Shikimati pathway. No animal has a Shikimati pathway. It couldn't possibly have any impact on animals on this planet.
Mm.
But, of course, they weren't thinking about the fact that actually we humans have more microbial cells than human cells, and that we are in a symbiotic relationship. We scratch our bacteria back, and they scratch our back, so to speak. And so if we are getting glyphosate exposure in our food and in our drink, then it is very reasonable, unproven hypothesis, but it's very reasonable that it's also blocking vitamin K production. Now, vitamin K is important for so many things, including multiple anti-cancer effects, but for those who are listening who are struggling with fertility issues, vitamin K is critical for fertility. For example, sperm production absolutely depends upon vitamin K.
Can I ask you to hold that thought? Definitely want to come back here. We're speaking with Dr. Greg Plotnikoff, excuse my pronunciation, and this is Take
Charge.
Plotnikoff. I just went too slow. This is Take Charge of Your Health. Dr. Plotnikoff wrote this book, Trust Your Gut, Get Lasting Healing from Irritable Bowel and Other Chronic Digestive Problems Without Drugs. We will be back. We're going to take a short break. We're going to continue. It's very hard to break up this conversation at this point. We'll be right back. And we'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health. I'm Corinne Fernari with my co-host,
Carol Peterson.
And we're right in the middle of a very interesting and intense and informative conversation with Dr. Greg Plotnikoff. He's the author of Trust Your Gut, Get Lasting Healing from Irritable Bowel and Other Chronic Digestive Problems Without Drugs. So, Dr. Plotnikoff, when we stopped, I so impolitely interrupted, but I had to. you were talking about fertility, and it's such an important subject. So can we go back to that?
Yes, well, yes. So many couples now struggle with fertility.
Exactly.
And things that tend to get overlooked in fertility, one little tidbit, vitamin E as an elephant, vitamin E was actually the first vitamin that was discovered that was necessary for pregnancy. No vitamin E, no possible pregnancy. And that's why the vitamin E's are called tocopherols and tocotrienols. They are toco meaning pregnancy. So for fertility, yes to vitamin E. But vitamin K is also really important as well. Vitamin K, among its multiple effects, actually is absolutely necessary for men to produce sperm. Now, for many men on our planet, in fact, maybe 100% of them, are relatively lower on sperm count now at this point in history than apparently ever before. And the decline in sperm counts has plummeted or accelerated since 1995 especially, and it seems to be picking up pace, so much so that leading scientists in the world recently estimate that by the year 2034, young men on the planet Earth, all over the Earth, will have just 2% of the sperm counts of their grandfathers.
Oh, my
now,
goodness.
Now, that sperm count does not allow fertility.
Exactly.
So,
and so, so for whatever reason, all over the world, sperm counts are plummeting.
All over the world, not just in industrialized nations.
Yes, and so I don't know if anyone's, what all the populations studied, but certainly at the big international conference, I think it was held in Sweden recently, there were researchers from literally all of, nearly every continent. I don't know if Antarctica was there, But it's very clear the numbers are plummeting. No one can explain why. But no one has really talked about how critical vitamin K is, and no one has really talked about, how critical our gut, our microbiome is for making vitamin K for us, and there are a variety of things in our environment which may actually block that. And so certainly vitamin K is up there as a hypothetical, or I should say Roundup, or glyphosate, these herbicide products and their metabolites are certainly, because of blocking the known pathways for producing vitamin K, therefore, in our diet, in our water, in our air, actually may be adversely affecting men all over this planet, and therefore couples all over this planet, and therefore, a lot of suffering may go into this. So
vitamin K might help us with the ravages of glyphosate.
Yes.
Possibly.
Possibly.
We don't know totally for sure.
It's a plausible hypothesis.
Okay.
Yes, it would need testing. So, so one of the things is a hypothesis without data is pretty empty.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, no one has really articulated this hypothesis before. So now we'll just find ways of getting that out and find people who can actually assess and measure this.
So how are you identifying who needs vitamin K, or are you using it in your practice liberally because we're having problems with it?
Yes, this is one of these things that knowing that there's no downside to it,
mm-hmm.
then I'm just kind of like, good, let's talk Let's talk green leafy vegetables. Let's talk supplementation. And let's talk about the pros and cons. The pros are a big, long list. The cons?
Nothing there.
I can't think of anything.
Well, that sounds like the benefit risk ratio is definitely on our side.
Yes, and we're extrapolating from the experience in Japan, where people have really high dietary intakes and really high treatment intakes, and with no known adverse side effects.
And how are the sperm counts in Japan?
That was my question.
Well, yeah, that's actually a really good question.
Exactly.
And I don't know.
Because
there are all kinds of confounders, because it's not probably the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
But, for example, you know, Japan has a lot of things. They have good omega-3 levels. They have good iodine levels.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to have really high mercury levels, and no one wants to talk about that.
Mm-mm.
Don't take my sushi away from me, please. No, yeah, that's kind of so. I'm not sure exactly the data from Japan, but that would be an important part of evaluating this hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, instead of waiting 10 years, I would say
exactly
it's a couple facing fertility. There's no downside to 45 micrograms a day of vitamin K2.
45 micrograms or milligrams?
Yep. Micrograms.
Micrograms.
Micrograms. I'm not recommending everyone go in 45 milligrams. But in readily available over the counter, 45 to 350 micrograms of vitamin
mm-hmm.
K2.
Okay.
Multiple products out there with that.
Often I give for back pain or pain. Often, even bone pain, I give a 10 milligram vitamin K.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And
this
very
is this
helpful.
In addition to the vitamin D that you'd be giving as well for
yes.
the pain.
Well, I don't give lots of I don't specifically give vitamin D for pain.
Oh, well.
Well, enlighten me, please.
So this is a funny story. Back in the 1990s, I was feeling pretty darn incompetent, seeing a lot of people with chronic pain day after day. And I, the people kept coming back to, and I just kind of like, did I miss something in medical school? How is it that all these people I see have chronic pain, and I've like been taught diddly about this? And yes, this is back when drug reps were knocking on my door every day saying, more opiates, more opiates. I'm just like, I don't think so. And so I said, I must have missed something somewhere. So I went into medical literature and searched and found this article entitled Hypovitaminosis D, low vitamin D, slow to be diagnosed in immigrant women. And so this is interesting. The British Medical Journal, this was six women who had moved from, like, Mumbai to London and then developed weakness and bone pain and general overall pain, and that no one could figure out. So someone said, well, check a vitamin D level. And lo and behold, they were all low in vitamin D. They were given vitamin D, and they were just like, woohoo, my life back.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, my goodness, this is the population I'm seeing. I'm working 14 different languages every day, and immigrants and inner city folk and all kinds of people. I'm going to start checking vitamin D levels. And lo and behold, everyone was low. And so I published 150 consecutive primary care patients with chronic pain lasting more than 6 months that couldn't be explained. Measured vitamin D level and found that 100% of Native American, 100% of African American, 100% of Central American, like, I think 100% of East African, 100% of West African, 90-some percent of Southeast Asians, and like 86% of whites were all severely vitamin D deficient with, I know this is Minnesota where we don't get as much
sun.
Yes, but also the more color in our skin, the more sun we need to make vitamin D.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just started putting, I started putting everyone in vitamin D, and they were like getting better. I said, oh, we've got to publish this. So I published 150 consecutive primary care people and documented six people with undetectable levels, and included a woman who had been treated with high-dose neuroleptic, antipsychotic medications and wasn't any better. She had undetectable vitamin D. People had been given inappropriate diagnoses like conversion disorder. Oh, they're faking it. One gentleman I remember had over, and this is 1999, had over $250,000 worth of medical procedures,
$1998,
without any improvement. And then he was found to have no detectable vitamin D. He got on vitamin D, and he's just like, woohoo! And so, so I said, I've got to publish this. Published it when I arrived in Japan, and it went on to become one of the most highly cited articles in the history of the Mayo Clinic proceedings. And so I moved back to from Japan in 2008. I just presumed that it would be part of standard of care in the United States, especially in chronic pain patients, because this is cheap, it's easy, easy to measure, easy to monitor, low cost, like low toxicity, and it just seems like a reasonable first step thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, I found out that, no, there's great pushbacks against this. Well, we're testing too many people for vitamin D, or as the Journal of the American Medical Association ran an editorial, and they literally said, I kid you not, physicians stopped testing and stopped treating vitamin D because, quote, it threatens our capacity to do randomized controlled trials in normal populations.
Oh, my goodness. I'm right.
Now, how do you figure that?
Well, I wrote back to JAMA. I said, hey, look, the Surgeon General says that, quote, osteoporosis threatens every American. And the Surgeon General says a way to prevent osteoporosis is to ensure good vitamin D. I said, the only way you can do that is to recommend people get vitamin D, and you actually have to measure to make sure that you're not under-treating or over-treating, because there's no physical exam for vitamin D. I can't put my hands on someone and says, you have level 46, or 28, you have to measure. You can't, there's no way of assessing and looking at someone. It's like looking at someone to try to guess their cholesterol level. Can't do it, and we think nothing about checking a cholesterol measurement. But
this second, I'm looking at an article from the New York Times as you're speaking, and it starts out with "There's no reasons for patients to receive vitamin D tests. They do not have osteoporosis. Their bones were not cracking." And then it goes on and it quotes different experts saying clinics are acting like there's a pandemic of vitamin D deficiency. Dr. Joanne Mason, a preventive medicine researcher at Brigham Women's Hospital in Boston. And then they're Still, with all the evidence, vitamin D has become a religion, says Dr. Clifford Rosen, an osteoporosis researcher. And goes on and on and on. Pages of it go on and on.
Those are the same people. Dr. Joanne Manson was the one who wrote, said, stop testing, stop treating versus threatening our capacity to do randomized controlled trials in normal populations. And she has a $20 million trial from the NIH that she wanted to make sure that there wasn't going to be any confounders for it. So she said, you know, don't run ahead of the data. But the data was running ahead of her because it's really clear that, for example, people were very concerned that, you know, testing in the Medicare population went up 8,300%. But low vitamin D is an incredible risk factor for falls in the elderly. The very thing that puts elderly into nursing.
Weakened muscles, broken bones.
Yeah, so it's really clear.
Confusion.
So when they say there's no evidence, ask people who treat people with bone pain about vitamin D, or not bone pain, but pain in general. I can't tell you how many people have been told they have fibromyalgia and it turned out to be simply vitamin D deficiency.
My goodness. I had looked at Dr. Forrest Tennant has several monographs on his website. He was president of the American Pain Association. He discusses the role of hormones and pain. However, at one point he has a monograph that says that the pain caused by low vitamin D cannot be relieved by any other substance but vitamin D. You cannot use opioids, you cannot use anti-inflammatories, nothing will touch it but vitamin D.
Yes, period. Because vitamin D is critical, and as we talk about bone being like a coral reef, you know, vitamin D is an essential part of the matrix, and anything else like use of non-steroidals or opiates or other things is just there to block pain signaling. It has nothing to do with supporting and developing the matrix. And so that's kind of the critical concern here is that low-cost, low-toxicity interventions, it's like, do we want to wait 25 years for their proof, or do you want to okay, vitamin D at Costco, retail price is 1.8 cents per day, or what's that, you know, $7 a year. You know, it's just kind of like, how many days in the hospital do you need to save to justify a $7 a year expense?
Now, in the African-American black community, you were stating that there is an 80% deficiency rate, but at the same time, they say that when vitamin D is at a little bit higher level, still within normal, it's not healthy for the black community. Do you think that's a misnomer?
Well, I think this is something that needs to be studied further because it healthy is actually, I'm not quite sure what people are looking for.
Blood pressure.
I worry about anything related to where you say one size fits all.
Mm-hmm.
And and a critical thing is so many studies are done where everyone's given one size, like 2,000 international units.
Yeah.
And that's great if people are deficient to begin with and have a low BMI, and you're probably under age 16, but if you're 65 and have a BMI of 35 and have dark skin and you're living, you know, halfway to the North Pole, 2,000 international units a day could be completely underdosing. And for someone who, someone else, it could be completely overdosing. So that's the problem with the public health approach. One size fits all. From a clinical approach, I say, okay, if you measure someone in something and you find them to be low, the clinically important question is, if you replenish them to a, quote, normal level, whatever that might be, does that result in better outcomes? And for people who are looking at things like pain, weakness, fatigue, those are, you know,
bone.
A month of vitamin D, you should see some turnaround. I mean, literally, there have been people expelled from school. I know of one person expelled from West Point because he got progressively weaker and weaker throughout his 4 years there, and no one could explain. He went to Johns Hopkins, he went to the Armed Forces Institute, he went all these places, and he was wheelchair-bound, and he said, you know what, we can't explain it, he's faking. And so he was forced to leave West Point. And once you leave West Point, you cannot be readmitted. So as soon as he's discharged from West Point, he goes to the Mayo Clinic, and the first test they get is vitamin D, find that he is unmeasurable. Give him vitamin D, and he is up out of his wheelchair within a day or so.
It's absorbed that rapidly?
Mm-hmm. That rapidly.
Yes. Yes, I've heard that. We used to do an injectable with 400,000 IU in it, and one physician reported back to me that one day after injecting his patient, all signs of pain from rheumatoid arthritis disappeared. One day.
Yes. So was it rheumatoid arthritis pain or was it vitamin D deficiency
pain? Good
question.
Yes. Good question.
Yes. And so here's the thing that some of the studies have done have given people have gotten shots, big doses of vitamin D. And the thing is, they kind of backfired because it actually increased risk of falls and fractures. And I think it's because all of a sudden people felt so much better, just like, get me out of here. I'm going dancing.
Yes.
Before they were
recovered yet.
Yeah, before they were strong enough. So this has been an absolutely wonderful hour. I always speak about how I learn. I'm so lucky that I'm able to learn on my radio show. I've got a page of notes I've taken, and I know the audience has learned. So, Dr. Plotnikoff, what would you like to leave the audience with? We have about a minute.
Well, I just want to kind of affirm the kind of whole essence behind your show. It's like fundamentals first, then pharmaceuticals. And a lot of the fundamentals in life are really low cost or even free. And for some reason, people like myself have been trained to think pharmaceuticals first, forget the fundamentals. And I just think that the health revolution means actually reversing that and flipping it. Let's all focus on the fundamentals first, then we can consider the pharmaceuticals.
Thank you so much. What is your website?
We're at www.mn for Minnesota, personalizedmedicine.com.
What a wonderful hour. Carol?
I think we're going to have you back, Dr. Plotnikoff. We didn't even get to where I thought we would go.
our main topic.
Our main topic about the microbiome and oncology.
And you know, they just published a new study saying that probiotics are worthless. They don't work.
Well, so we'll have to talk about that.
We have to.
Yes.
So I
would have a delight.
What a delight.
Likewise. So much fun. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. It was an absolute pleasure. And Carol, thank you. Absolute pleasure.
Yes.
Thank you for spending this hour with us. We will be back next week. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Okay.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
In conclusion, I'd like to say, remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Frenari, RPA, CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health, WBAI. My website is frenarihealth.com, and my office number is 212-219-0700. I've just opened an office in the Hamptons, and I would love you to come by and visit me there. My office number in the city and the Hamptons is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me, Left Hook from Redding, California. Their website is Redding Left Hook. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.